Labor Radio is with Daryl Evans. He's the executive director of FIPA, the BC Freedom of Information and Privacy Association. Welcome to the show, Daryl.
Good to be here.
What is the BC Freedom of Information and Privacy Association? What does it do?
We're a citizens watchdog group over freedom of information and privacy issues, so the best way of looking at our group is that we're a civil liberties group devoted to privacy rights and freedom of information rights. Just for your listeners' benefit, freedom of information is basically the citizen's right of access to government records. And there's acts all across Canada at the provincial level, and there's a federal act called the Access to Information Act.
So what exactly does your group do? Are you basically an advocacy group, or are you a lobby group?
Gee, I think those are pretty much the same, aren't they? Advocacy groups do lobbying. But we're all those things. We're an educational group. We put on informative events for the public. We have an online library. We take inquiries from the public and privacy complaints, for instance. We assist the public with their freedom of information requests. We do research and issue publications. And, we have a website that's quite full of information for the public.
Is there a fee for the service for the public who want to access your group?
No, there's a membership fee if a person wants to become a member, like any, non-profit group. We have a membership fee. It's pretty low. It's $25, and less for students, by the way. But there's no fee for any of our services. Well, if we put on an educational event, like a conference, there would be a conference fee. But in general, no. For asking a question and getting some help, there's no fee.
And does your group provide speakers for community events or for unions or for other organizations that may want to use you to bring information to their members?
Sure, we have a speakers bureau.
Right now, the big campaign seems to be the Right to Privacy campaign. It's been, supported by various labor unions and the general public and other public support groups. This campaign seems to be fighting the government's privatization measures with respect to the medical services plan and the PharmaCare. How is this group being involved in that?
Well, the issue to us is purely one of privacy. We're not against outsourcing per se, but if outsourcing endangers the protection of our information and threatens our privacy, then yes, we're against it. So the question for us when we were getting involved or setting the goals of the campaign was one that, if outsourcing doesn't in any way offend privacy, then we're not against it. And that's the basis upon which we joined. However, it's turned out to be a much thornier problem than anyone envisioned. And I think even the privacy commissioners, who are the independent officers who watchdog this issue, have learned a lot from this process. And indeed, it's being watched around the world. The issue is, you work very hard to build laws at home, privacy laws and other kinds of civil liberty laws, and then when you leave the country, or in this case, when your information leaves the country, it's no longer subject to your laws. So it's subject to the laws of the country that the information goes to or it's found in. And, of course, that opens a huge can of worms regarding the transmission of information around the world, which happens at the blink of an eye now. So if we want to maintain privacy law, we have a problem. So during this Right to Privacy campaign, the commissioner researched this thoroughly. It's an excellent report, which I recommend to any of your readers who wants a real education on international law, privacy, and information flow, and the risk to privacy. What he recommended, and what in many cases the government has done, has basically made it a rule that if a contract is outsourced that involves the handling of personal information, it cannot be sent outside the country. Now, this is a huge limitation, and I doubt very much that this is going on elsewhere. So that's only one of about 20 different measures the government has introduced as a result of this controversy and as a result of the commissioner's report.
The government has passed or is going to pass legislation that they say would limit the outsourcing of information to any second or third country outside of Canada, and they say that this would then meet the requirements of the Privacy Commission's report. How do you respond to that?
It's true and it's not true. They did pass an Amendment Act. It's a very good one. It's not airtight. And the commissioner, in his report, recognized that it's extremely difficult to be, if there's any form of outsourcing, to be airtight. However, it's gone a long way. The problem is that the act they introduced does not apply to contracts signed previous to the Amendment Act. So there are hundreds of contracts to which these, what they call mitigating, actions don't apply. Now, they also have not implemented all the commissioner's recommendations, and we're waiting for them to do so. And until they do so, we're not happy that our information is well enough protected. They've gone a long way, but it's not yet quite right.
What kinds of recommendations have they not implemented that you'd like to see implemented?
Well, that's a toughie one. I'd need the list of recommendations before me, which unfortunately I don't have, to go through them one by one. Some of the main ones are that Canada and the province need to enter into agreements with the United States that, in this case of the Patriot Act, which is the big threat here, that the Patriot Act will not be used in the case of Canadian information. That's an example of one. Also that the governments need to conduct an actual study and review of contracts that do exist and information flows that do exist, because I think the feeling is that this has gotten out of control. And, police, for instance, can share information almost at will. They don't even need a treaty to do so. They could do it under something in legislation that's called an arrangement. Now, if you know what that is, you know more than I do. An arrangement could, as far as I know, be a phone call between two officers to share information. So we have a very loose, regime for sharing information. And I think what the commissioners need to know, and as I say, there's commissioners in every province, plus there's the Federal Privacy Commissioner concerned in this. They want to know exactly what information sharing is really going on, what information is already crossing the border. We need to have a look at this. We need to study it and find out if legislation needs to be further improved.
Hasn't information been crossing the border for years and years, and only recently has there been an act passed by Parliament to protect the privacy of Canadians, individuals? And so now they've kind of got this Pandora's box out there of all this information that they now have to put a control on. Is that not the case?
That's accurate, yeah. I should mention, though, this is not unique to Canada or anything. The European Union passed legislation about a decade ago, I believe it was, that imposed privacy standards. Now they, having had fascist and communist regimes in their country, know the potential of information when you gather enough of it on a citizen, and they know what abuses can occur in the hands of a government that wants to do the wrong thing with that information. So they introduced privacy law for the private sector, as I say, about 10 years ago. The Canadian Federal Privacy Act that covers the private sector, which is called the Personal Information Protection and Electronic Documents Act, a long name, we call it PIPEDA. This act was passed in response to the European Union legislation, because the European Union legislation said, now that we have privacy standards here in Europe, we do not want to share information with any country that does not have equivalent privacy protection. So they recognized in the beginning that, there's no sense passing privacy law if the information leaves the country and anything goes. And as you know, the United States, for example, is assembling dossiers on virtually every person on this planet, and that's not exaggerating much. They want to know exactly who everyone is, and then they want to add a lot more data to that. So, Canada passed this law in response to the European Union's legislation, and then the provinces have followed suit, because the Federal Act had in it a stipulation that if any province didn't pass equivalent legislation to cover its private sector within a certain amount of time, then the federal legislation would come to bear in those provinces. And that is indeed what's happened. It's been a year now since BC's Act was passed, and Alberta also passed an act, and Quebec had an act many years ago. So those are the three provinces that now have a Personal Information Protection Act covering the private sector. Now, you should all know that there's been privacy acts across Canada covering the government's information that they have about you for years. The next step that the government saw was that, yes, now we need to pass one for the private sector as well. The United States has taken a different approach. They've got a patchwork of privacy legislation down there. They don't have a federal act, and it's very controversial. But, of course, totally different cultural situation there.
So despite all these acts, we have this internet, which allows people to access information very quickly and easily. So how does the government and how does your group protect information in the internet? How do we do that?
It's not really as complicated as, internet experts sometimes like to make it out to be. People love to throw their hands up and say, listen, we have no more privacy, it's a lost cause, that kind of thing. But let's not remember, let's not forget that laws exist in every country. Information lands somewhere. It may fly through the air, but it lands somewhere, and it's collected, and it's stored, and it's disclosed by an individual or by a company. Those companies are subject to the laws of the land they're in. Now, this movement to privacy legislation is a tidal wave around the earth. And the reason for that is we recognize that privacy protection is integral to the protection of other human rights now. In other words, if you're under constant surveillance by either a corporate entity or a government entity, your freedom is severely undermined. The more information they can collect about you, and the more they can intrude into your private life, really, the more impinged on you are as a private citizen. And certain kinds of information, many kinds of information they could have about you, could be used to discriminate against you or to harm you in other ways, deny you a loan. Now that genetic data is becoming more and more common, the subject of genetic discrimination is a huge issue, for instance. And the United States has even passed a law barring genetic discrimination. We're a little bit slower here in Canada. So that shows the potential explosive quality of information. And we all know that. The phrase knowledge as power has been around for 500 years. So knowledge of you gives others power over you. So governments, not just citizens, not just wacky groups like ours, but governments have recognized this for more than 20 years. And that's why they've been passing legislation. So the answer to your question is yes. The information practices can be regulated. Now, we don't want to over-regulate. We don't want to under-regulate. We want to maintain freedom of expression and thought, but we also want to maintain private lives. Both of those things are necessary to maintain freedom on this planet. So we build a privacy law carefully here in Canada, and we should actually demand that any place that information goes, if it is handled in another country, that we have equivalent privacy protection in that country. Now that outsourcing is taking place not only to the United States, but to India, soon China, no doubt, we'll want to make sure that our information is protected if we send it to there, especially for management and handling and processing.
Another piece to the Privacy Act was the access to information. So in the Federal Act for the private sector, what's the ability of people to make an access to information request, say, from a corporation to see what information they have on them? Is that a possibility?
That's very well said, yes. I guess maybe the single most important principle in privacy legislation is that you have a right of access to your own information. The Federal Act has that right, and it also says that access to your information must be given to you for a minimal fee. So they can't create a barrier. A bank can't charge you $500 to access your personal information. It's a minimal or no fee, pardon me, in the PIPEDA, the Personal Information Protection Act of federal. And BC's legislation also has an equivalent right. Now, that's not an unlimited right. There are some grounds upon which they can refuse you some information, but it's a little too complicated to go into here. It has to be very good grounds, and they have to have a very strong case to withhold anything.
And like that letter that I received a letter from the provincial government surrounding the Right to Privacy campaign, where I asked for information regarding how a third party could access my information. It depends on how you word the access request, and if you don't word it properly, they can refuse it to you because you didn't ask for the right thing. Is that also a problem that you see that would be affecting a lot of people?
Yeah, there is an art to asking for the right information. You know, the answer to any problem, as you know, is usually asking the right question. So yeah, you've got to be careful about the way you word your request. But the government in this case has, you've asked for government information, which is what this legislation that's just been passed, the amendments that have just been passed cover. It covers the information the government collects about you. And the issue is the Patriot Act allowing the U.S. government to get access to that information when it's either in the U.S. or accessible to a company in the U.S., you know, a parent company. That's when information is outsourced to a private company. You've got to word it properly. You can't just ask for, say, all information about me and send it to one government department. You have to have an awareness of what information might reside in any individual government department. So, by the way, that initiative was an initiative of the BC Government and Service Employees Union, not the Right to Privacy campaign. We're thinking about taking similar actions or not. We're still debating that. If people want to know what information about them is being given to a particular company, that's what they should ask for. In other words, if you want to know what medical records are being sent to Maximus, that's what you should ask for. I think the response of the government would be then, well, it's not being sent from a central source, or it's being sent from many sources, but you'd start learning about the pathways of information to this company, Maximus, and the kinds of information that are being sent. And the commissioners also asked that question, I believe. You know, like, the flows of information have become so complicated that very few people really understand what information is going where. And I don't know if anyone has a total government overview of that, which is really an interesting position to find ourselves in.
So what's the likelihood of me being able to go to Maximus, to their U.S. headquarters, and say, I'd like access to the information you have about me on your files, given that they don't have the same right to privacy and access to information legislation that we have?
Okay, just to clarify, the company that's handling the information from PharmaCare and medical services is not located in the U.S. The parent company's in the U.S., but they've created a special BC incorporated company to handle the information. So that would be the company you could go to if by now they're active and they have the information, etc. They would be subject to an information request. If they're not subject to the act that covers government, then they'll be subject to the act that covers the private sector. In this case, I'm not sure exactly which Maximus is subject to, but it will be subject to one of them. It could be, I think, if I'm recollecting properly, that companies that information management is outsourced to are under the Government Act. They're considered for that purpose to be part of government as far as coverage by, and in this case it's the Freedom of Information and Protection of Privacy Act that you need to look for the rules. That's the act that was amended to try to mitigate the impact of the possible impact of the Patriot Act.
And this is a very interesting topic. I want to ask more about the U.S. government and why do these groups and your group, I don't know if your group believes this, but do you believe that the U.S. government has the time to build a file on every Canadian and tediously figure out who we all are, like you were talking about previously?
It's not a matter of time. It's a matter of data warehousing and data mining, as they call it. It's all done by computer program, and sure, they have the time. Security is the single most important issue for the United States government right now, and they're investing tremendous amounts in it, and it's a growth industry. It's now part of the military-industrial complex, and the U.S. government is the biggest consumer of information. In other words, they have, by their patronage, or, you know, by being a customer, the U.S. government has prompted the growth of tremendous information management industries. And they do what's called data mining. That means that they gather all kinds of bits of data, and they identify the data by individual, and they plow through it, and they search through it, and they match data up. And what they're doing, of course, is called profiling. They want to build a they want to detect profiles of people who they consider might be security risks. So it might be a matter of the library books your travel history, your little library books you may have rented, the kinds of things you taken air, you know, flight lessons, you know, do you live in a certain place, what's your economic strata, what's your racial background, your cultural background, which church, kind of church or synagogue or whatever do you go to, you know, and on it goes. Have you made certain kinds of credit card transactions, what's your banking history? And further, if you have AIDS, maybe your medical history. Maybe it'll be your background in certain, you know, public interest movements or protest movements. Maybe it'll be the kind of things you study in university. So they're combing through all this data and searching for hot items. And they've been doing this on the internet, by the way, for a long time with the program. Some of your listeners may know, called Echelon. So programs are getting more and more sophisticated in doing this kind of information, like it's like a dragnet. It's like a dragnet, you know? It's a net that goes along the bottom, gathers everything up, and then they start sorting through it, and they have computer programs to do that. So yes, they want to build dossiers. They want to know exactly who's in the country, who's coming in, who's leaving, with what, and that's all part of this. You know, the main controversy about this was around something called the Total Information Awareness Program, which was proposed in the United States about 3 years ago, I guess it was. And that was a data mining program that wanted to create a dossier on everyone in the U.S. And that program was very controversial and was abandoned. But what really happened was it was split into about 20 different pieces and farmed off to different depots.
That to me kind of, you know, I think in the back of my mind, then only the guilty people or the people who are potentially terrorists should be afraid of this happening. The normal everyday person who lives their life and doesn't do anything exciting, normally you would think that they wouldn't be afraid of their information then being passed on to the United States. What do you think about that?
Now you're being provocative, right? And again, you have to go back to just look at the history of mankind on this planet. What's that look like to you? How free have people been? How peaceful has the planet been? How respectful of others' human rights have people been? And I shouldn't really need to go any farther than that to answer your question. But the human mind exists in a kind of a medium of denial, I'm afraid, you know. It's just the nature of the human mind to think it can't happen here. But I don't think, you know, we're celebrating right now, you know, I guess it was the discovery of Auschwitz, and we have to think back to the time when every Jew had to wear a Star of David, and they were herded into ghettos. And ghettoization can be of many kinds. And you don't need to herd people into a small space anymore to ghettoize them. You just need to herd their information and keep an eyeball on them. Privacy is a precious commodity, and you cannot have freedom without it. If your home can be invaded at will or arbitrarily, if your thoughts and your speech and your communications can be monitored at will, this is a very unsafe condition to be in. And you don't have to look very far to see how malign the intentions of some governments can become. And we've seen the U.S. lurch toward, a very unhealthy state of mind. It's not that long ago that we had the McCarthy era, and there was persecution of people for their thoughts and their alliances. that can very easily happen, and indeed has begun to happen a little more than it used to, with, you know, certain kinds of advocacy groups maybe looked at as potential terrorists, people who aren't thinking right, are under more suspicion than people who, quote-unquote, are thinking right. And if you're not with us, you're against us. You know, it's not very, very long ago that those words rang a bell, you know, around the world. So I leave that to your listeners to form their own opinion about how safe they feel. I don't think we can afford to feel safe any time. It's part of the problem of the human race that we have to be vigilant. We have to guard, and we have to be aware of what can happen in human society, and we have to really watch our freedom.
So this begs the whole question of how effective is this actual act? You know, if the U.S. government has other means of finding information on you, how effective is our protection of our privacy with all these acts the government are passing?
That's a good question. It's an evolving perspective. The moves that the BC government have made are quite strong. In other words, when they outsource information to a company like Maximus, you can be pretty sure that there's not going to be secret or unauthorized access. Not totally sure, but a lot more sure than for in just about any province or country I know outside of Europe. Now, Europe has its problems as well with privacy. But unfortunately, they've gone a long way. And even the commissioner commended them for as far as they went, but he said, but we must go farther if we're really going to make sure that BC government information about its citizens does not fall into hands we don't want it to fall into. We've got to do another set of things. So, like I say, there was how many recommendations? I think there were 16 recommendations. They're not all implemented by a long shot. So can the U.S. get information by other means? Yes, and I think those things are starting to be looked at as well. So, you know, if, for instance, the Canadian Imperial Bank recently confessed to its customers that Visa information was managed in a U.S. company. Therefore, we must inform you that it's possible that by means of the Patriot Act or other means, your information could be accessed by the U.S. government. We're informing you of that. We're informing you of that now. So that begs the question of how comfortable do citizens feel with that? Wouldn't they rather their information was managed, well, in Canada, where it's less likely to be accessed? Why should we take the extra, why should we encourage extra insecurity by letting information go out of Canada if it's then going to be subject to the laws of a foreign country? Good question. I don't want to create a firewall around, well, pardon me, I do want to create a firewall around Canada. I don't want to create total trade barriers around Canada or anything as far as the flow of information goes, but just in the name of international trade, are we going to sacrifice privacy? Now, a conservative would probably answer that different from I would. I'm not a far leftist, but I'm somewhere in the middle. I'd rather make sure that our privacy is protected. And if that's going to impinge a little bit on international trade, it doesn't bother me that much.
That brings to mind, to me, call centers that exist in the United States and the Bahamas and places like that, that when we call our Visa company or lots of other companies, BC Hydro, maybe outsourcing call centers to a third country, you know, it makes me wonder just how much information is being sent outside now that I'm talking to you. It seems to be quite a lot.
Yes, that's true. And it's not so long ago, and it seems incredible to say it to you now, but it's not so long ago that certain companies were using prisoners in federal institutions to manage information and do calls. Now, with the controversy brought forward by the Patriot Act and other means, it seems incredible that governments and private institutions would put personal information in the hands of people in prisons with obviously criminal records and backgrounds to manage our personal information. And it turns out that people were stalked, women were stalked as a result when prisoners left prison. And, you know, crime did occur. It occurs anyway, but it seems not only naive, but absolutely stupid that the government shouldn't have endangered our information in that way. But what it points to is a culture of extreme naivety and denial when it comes to the importance of protecting privacy. You know, technology, we're also seduced by the flash of technology that I think it seems to sweep away many rights in its path, and privacy being one of them. And again, it's a question of what are we going to value? I think we have to move to a society that puts a lot more value on personal privacy. It's like safe sex practices. We have to think about safe information practices. And just to quote one danger that's exploding is, of course, ID theft. The more information about you and the more freely sensitive personal information like financial or health or whatever flows, the easier it is for someone to steal that information and pretend to be you to make transactions. It's the biggest single, I believe it's the fastest growing crime in the Western world and probably around the world. So we have to develop a different mentality about the way we handle personal information. We have to be more respectful of it. And to understand that when you respect personal information, you're respecting individuals, that they have a private life and they have a personal right to security.
Yeah, that reminds me of a situation that happened to my brother. He's a disabled person with psychological disability, and he had his wallet stolen one day, and he had a learner's license in there. And one day he went to renew his learner's license or get a replacement for the lost one, and he found out that somebody had stolen his identity and taken it to the United States and rented a car and crashed it or else some other thing where they caused a huge fine to be caused in the United States that he had to pay this huge $1,000 fine, and now he's fighting that through the courts. That's a good example of what happens when information is stolen from you. It could be, you know, just out of your back pocket. So, you know, that we have information on the internet, that we have information, you know, in files and in different offices, private and public sector, kind of makes me feel like we're living in an Orwellian world now. How do you see us becoming more like the Orwellian world because of this?
Well, I think Orwell is proving to be a visionary. More and more, he may not have seen the exact things that would exist, and who could have? He was writing in the was it late 40s or that when he wrote 1984, but he certainly had all the right ideas, you know, not just because of the surveillance dimension, but as the double speak and the eternal war or the constant war being fought, creating a certain environment that people were willing to sacrifice freedom in the name of fighting this endless war, double think, where you can think two different opposing things at the same time. The man really understood the human mind and the dynamics of oppression, you know, and tyranny. Information is liberating, and it can also restrict freedom. And, you know, every piece of information that another individual or a government can have about you is like another piece in the key that can unlock, a way to have power over you. Like your brother, he has a medical file somewhere. We don't know how well that medical file is respected. He probably dealt with many agencies that have information about him, private and public, you know, nonprofit groups that help, which have formerly had very little restriction on what they can do legally with personal information. Now we have more restriction. I think there was certainly among those kinds of agencies a respect for personal information, no question about it, and there has to be, or they couldn't serve people. So your brother is now, and the poor guy has a mental disability, so you can imagine how destabilizing it is for him. Even worse than it would be for a normal, I shouldn't say normal, but an individual without that mental problem.
been a very interesting show. I was just wondering, and just in closing, what other campaigns that FIPA is involved in besides the Right to Privacy campaign? Is there other campaigns that are of importance to you?
Yes, as we move to an election in BC, we're putting a lot of attention on reforming our Freedom of Information and Protection of Privacy Act, which has taken a bit of a battering over 10 years and really needs to be updated. Citizens are not getting, they're doing fairly well getting their personal information, which is a huge, huge advance. Groups that are critical of government programs or want to know more about what government is doing, want to know more about the formation of government policy are doing far, far worse. So now we're talking freedom of information. And, things started to decline as far as citizens having access to information under the Glenn Clark years, but they've gotten even worse under the Gordon Campbell years. Government has become quite a fortress as far as communicating with the public. There's been a politicization of the communication process. And for an environmental group or a political action group, often are having, or even individual citizens who've got a bone to pick with government over a zoning or, anything like that, seem to be having a lot more difficulty getting information. So we'll be putting attention on that and issuing a report, drawing people's attention to that. Besides that, there are three initiatives going on in the federal sphere. There's a possible reform of the Federal Access to Information Act being done. There's a review of the anti-terrorism legislation, which we're very interested in. And there's whistleblower legislation being, improved whistleblower legislation being put in place federally. All these things are being reviewed by parliamentary committees in the federal level. So we've got our hands full. We're a very, very small group. If there are volunteers out there who'd like to help with research or campaigning or anything like that, we always welcome volunteers. Should I give our phone number?
Yeah, how do you get a hold of me?
Sure. It's 604-739-9788. And maybe the easiest way is just to go through our website. There's a Got Feedback bar you can click on to send us a message.
And what is your website?
www.fipa, that's F-I-P-A, F as in Frank, I-P-A, .bc.ca. I'll give that once more. www.fipa.bc.ca.
Thanks a lot, Daryl. It's been a pleasure talking to you. Daryl is the Executive Director of the BC Freedom of Information and Privacy Association.